Welcome to Hype episode 164. My name is Selena and I'm joined this week, as always, by Pam. Hello.
Hello.
Or should I say hello?
Hello.
Because it is October and it is spooky. We're very excited to be back this week to talk about this week's biggest and most exciting news stories. We're going to talk about what we've been doing in fandom this past week. We are going to tackle some news. We're going to talk about TV shows and respond to some of the comments that you all have been sending in. If you would like to contribute to Hype Podcast, you can send in your feedback either by emailing hype@hypable.com. You can find us on Hypable, which is hypable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypablehype. You can also find us on Instagram at hypablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. We also have a Patreon where we release weekly extra bonus discussions as well as videos. This week's bonus discussion is going to be very topical. We're going to be talking about some of our favorite Halloween-y movies and TV show episodes and just general Halloween traditions that we have. And when I say we, I mainly mean Pam, because we don't really, you know, spoiler alert, we don't really have Halloween over here in Europe, but I'm going to do my best to tackle along. And you can go to patreon.com/hypepodcast for all of that if you want to contribute to, if you want to support the show. And if not, then just enjoy the regular show. The first thing we do, as always, is how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Why don't you go first?
Okay. This week was kind of hard for me because I feel like I didn't really do very much, but you know, Outlander is in full swing over on Stars. So I thought that I would recommend like a video series type thing that I've been watching over on YouTube. There's a guy named Sean Alexander and he's from Edinburgh, and he does a lot of like reactions to Outlander, but from like a Scottish person's perspective, which is something that I don't really get personally, because I have like a lot of American friends that watch Outlander, but not a lot of people like from other parts of the world that watch the series. So it's kind of cool to hear his interpretation of the episodes through that kind of lens, because that, you know, like he is of Scottish heritage. And he also, like, my favorite videos that he has up on his channel are the videos where he goes to visit some of the filming locations, like some of which are actually real historical spots in Scottish history. And so it's just like really fun, and like it's a really great way to be even more nerdy about Outlander. So I've been really enjoying those, and I just wanted to give his content a little shout out on the show, just in case anybody's looking for extra Outlander type things to add a little more hype into your life. Check him out for sure. And I'll put the link in the show notes so that Selena can link to his channel over like in like the actual show notes that show up on Hypable, in case you guys want to check it out too, and just kind of go a little bit deeper. I've been looking for more like ways to just kind of like dive deeper into Outlander the show, because it is one of my favorites. So that's kind of like been a new way that I've been doing that.
Oh, cool. This is awesome. And I love that, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's a very accurate sort of way of, when you say that it's mostly Americans who watch Outlander, like obviously that's probably not true, but it certainly feels that way online. And you know, when talking to people like Laura and stuff, like part of the attraction to Outlander is just kind of the exotic is not the right word, but you know what I mean, like the foreignness of it, the otherworldly quality that it sort of has. And that is kind of, you know, how I grew up feeling about American entertainment, so I totally get it.
Yeah, he has like video too that's pretty cool. It's like breaking down the Scottish slang, so to speak, in Outlander, and it's really funny because like some, you can get most of it when you're watching, but like it is kind of hard to fall into that mind frame, because the accents are super authentic on the show, at least I feel like they are. But he'll like talk about like whether or not it's super archaic, like if maybe like only a Scottish grandma would say it, or if it's something that they still use and stuff like that. So it's like, it's really cool. And yeah, I really have been enjoying his content. And shout out to Yuki, who did our artwork for the Patreon and also for our Twitter. She did our banner, because she's the one that turned me on to his stuff. And he does like a bunch of other stuff too. I haven't really like taken a deep dive into the rest of his content, but the Outlander stuff, like A++, would recommend.
Cool. My recommendation is, or how are we hyping this week, is following up on something we talked about a couple of weeks ago when it was announced that they are doing an all-female Lord of the Flies, and the internet kind of went crazy because that is a ridiculous thing to do. And a bunch of people, or two people at least, recommended to me a book called Beauty Queens by Libba Bray, who I wish I remember who they were, so please get in touch, because I was looking through my Twitter feed and I couldn't find you, but I know it was a couple of people who said that I should read it because it basically was what an all-female Lord of the Flies would be. And so I read it and I loved this book. Like, thank you both for turning me onto this book. This was amazing. So Beauty Queens is about a group of teenage girls, like modern teenage girls-ish. It is kind of the modern world, but there's like a little bit of a twist to it, who maroon on a desert island and basically have to survive. And reading this book, not only is it like hysterically funny, at first I was like, this is really dumb, but then I read it and I was like, oh my god, this is so brilliant. And not only is it funny, but it is also just extremely cutting in a very, like, I don't want to say subtle way, because it's definitely all there on the surface, but just in a really clever way. And what it basically posits is what I think a lot of people were identifying as the problem with an all-female Lord of the Flies reboot, which is that because of how society is kind of training us, like humans, to behave, when the Lord of the Flies novel was kind of saying that boys without social rules holding them back would basically turn into animals who killed and ate each other, completely lawless society. But what happens to the girls in Beauty Queens, and what is sort of seems like a more accurate imagining of what would happen to a group of girls ending up in this situation, is that they are sort of set free from all of the limitations and expectations that have been put on them by the modern world. So as opposed to a group of boys descending into violence and chaos, the girls kind of rise up and find their agency. You know, they begin to embrace skills that have been sort of repressed by a society that has tried to turn them into a specific package of woman, and they let that go, and the results are just astonishing. You know, like, you read this and you're like, yes, women, you know, it's so great. It's so aspirational. It's so silly. It's so sweet. There's all different types of girls in this book, and they all have each their own unique story. And it's amazing the kinds of stories that Libba Bray is telling. I think that, without giving anything away, I think that my favorite girls and my favorite stories are Mary Lou and Taylor's stories. I think they are fantastic. And I feel like after reading this book, when I'm saying that I'm sometimes going to the woods, I think that this is what I mean. You know, you just need to get away and just be yourself and chop trees if that's what you want to do, without someone being like, then where's the man to do that for you? And like, that's ridiculous. And I always found that ridiculous. And I really like to see this book kind of tear down the limitations of the patriarchy in the way that it does. It's very Americanized, obviously, but like, what isn't? And it's also just a little bit, like, obviously a little bit over the top intentionally, but that doesn't take away from the enjoyment. I highly recommend this book. It's a very fun and surprisingly thought-provoking read. So there you go. There's one for you, Jewel, to add to the reading list.
I saw that she said she was catching up on hype and also updating the Goodreads. Yes. List. Good luck to you, Jewel, because I feel like we talk about so many books on here. So,
but that's awesome, though. That's really, yeah. I think that's one of the best things that we do in hype is kind of our ongoing more or less official book club that we do. And like, if you guys are sort of wanting to get more involved with that, and definitely check out the Goodreads group that Jules has set up. It's just called Hype Podcast. So you can easily find it.
I'm going to go follow it right now.
Yeah. Aren't you already?
I think I just forgot where. Yeah, I know, right? Oh, God. Then you guys can all see how cringe all of the books that I read are. So I feel I've never read this book, but I have read some of Libba Bray's other books. Didn't she also write A Great and Terrible Beauty or something?
Yeah, that's one of her books.
I remember reading that like when I was a teenager. But I'm going to pick this up now. This sounds really fun.
Mm-hmm. I want to read more from her. I was very, very impressed by this book. All right. So anyway, we're going to move into the news. Now we have a couple of interesting stories to talk about. The first one in the lineup is the story that I feel like we always knew was coming. It is, dun dun dun, there is going to be Hunger Games and Divergent themed attractions coming to Times Square, New York. Lionsgate Entertainment is opening what they are calling a Lionsgate Entertainment City, which is coming to Times Square in 2019. My first thought, having never been to New York, was how the hell are they going to make room for a city in Times Square? Turns out it's going to be an indoor space. Again, having never been there, I have no idea where this would be in relation to all the big signs that I see in the movies. Anyway, we could discuss that. So this is basically, it's not a theme park exactly. It's going to be these kinds of attractions based on different Lionsgate properties inside a thing. It's going to be a Mad Men themed dining and lounge experience, offering fans an opportunity to step back in time and enjoy a night on the town inspired by the show's 1960s decor and decadence. Basically your average, like, diner done in a 60s style, I guess. For Hunger Games fans, there's going to be a Hunger Games flying simulator attraction taking fans on an exciting rescue mission through the capital of all things. In addition, there will be a Hunger Games-inspired Peter's Bakery and the Capital Confectionery. For Divergent fans, and this is the one I'm actually super excited about, not that I'm going to go, is a Dauntless Challenge course, which is a themed obstacle course. And finally, for John Wick fans, there's going to be a shooting ride where fans go head-to-head with a series of assailants. So, a couple of things to get into with this one. First of all, the ridiculousness of a Hunger Games, particularly capital-themed attraction continues to amp up its ridiculousness factor. You know, I feel like this is funny because it kind of ties into the book I was just talking about, Beauty Queens, and how it's called The Corporation in that, but it's basically this huge capitalist machine that is ruling the world. And I kind of feel like that's exactly what's going on here. It's like they know that the capital is in New York City at a ride pumping money out of people. Irony at its absolute finest, but they're going to do it anyway, and fans are going to go anyway.
Do you know what's so funny about that is I think that the best way to experience something like that is to realize that you're enchanted because they want you to be, and then take a step back and realize that that's the whole point of the book. It's like all of that is enchanting for the few that have it all the time, but it's not okay. When I went a few years ago at Comic-Con, it must have been right before the last movie came out. I think it was the year before you went. They had a Hunger Games experience, and like the Hunger Games promo stuff is always so well done, or was always so well done. And they had right across the street at the Hard Rock, you would go in and it was like basically like a capital, I guess, kind of a confectionery. You could get like fresh pressed juices and donuts and things like that. And then there were all these like stations where you could do different things. And it is like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And then you're like, but wait, no, it's not cool because this is bad. You know, it's really weird. It's super weird, but super well done if you realize that that is like the worst of the society, you know?
Right. So. Right. I think it's an interesting choice. You know, the flying simulator taking you on a rescue mission through the Capitol is a fun little choice that they made there. But I mean, yeah, again, what the hell? Like, there's a Harry Potter theme park. This is the world we live in. You know, go and enjoy it if you have the opportunity. Again, as I said, I can be all high and mighty about the Hunger Games thing, but the Divergent obstacle course, that sounds amazing. I would love to do that. I need to get in better shape for that one, but it sounds fun. I have some time. It opens in 2019. So just a final question I had for you about this story is, you've been to Times Square. Where does this fit in? Like, where do you think there would be such a giant indoor space?
Oh, God, I don't know. I feel like I blocked out a lot of Times Square because it's such a shit show. I don't know if they've brought back TRL officially. I'm not sure if they're in the same building, but that's like right in the middle of Times Square. And it's like a two-story. It was empty when I was there in 2013. I mean, like, that doesn't help anybody. But if you like Google like old TRL MTV location or whatever, again, I'm not sure if they're still using it for something else or if they're still using it now for the new iteration of TRL. But I could see it going somewhere like that. Or like, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the turnaround is in those. Mm-hmm. Or and like also if it's going to be like in Times Square, or if it's going to be like off to the side, like on one of the side streets, or maybe they're just going to put, is it like permanent or is it a touring thing? Is it going to be there forever?
I have no idea.
Because if it's just going to, yeah, I mean, I don't think they could take over a theater, but it would probably have to be some kind of building.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's a good place to put it because it's like the tourist spot in New York. It's like,
you the lines are going to be ridiculous.
Maybe they'll put it over by the Wax Museum.
Yeah, the lines for that are also ridiculous.
Yeah, I hear it's particularly bad in London. Yeah. I don't know about yes. that. I feel like every time I walked through, like, not, okay, well, the best thing about the Wax Museum in Times Square is that it's not, like, dead center. It's not where, like, the big monitors are. It's kind of, like, towards, like, Port Authority bus terminal, I think, if I remember correctly. So it's not in the heart of Times Square, but it's kind of, like a tiny little bit off to the side. I never saw lines there. And the summer I was there was the year that they had, oh my God, the One Direction wax figures that were touring. No lines ever. So I don't know. Maybe it's more popular overseas.
Yeah, it is. When we went to London, me and my family, for the release of Deathly Hallows in 2007, the day after, we were like, what should we do in London? It's going to be so much fun. And we decided to go to the Wax Museum. And we were in lines for like 5 hours. And it was ridiculous. And then it was just like wax figures of famous people inside. And I realized that that was pointless.
I was going to say, I feel like that's not a very you activity to pick.
No, it was not.
I will say, though, if you're ever in Hollywood and mm-hmm. you're looking for just something to do for the lulz, although it is kind of expensive, the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum that's right by the Chinese Theater, if you go like late enough, like an hour before they close or like 2 hours before they close, you get a discount. There's nobody in there. And if you have your student ID, they'll give you a student discount on top of that. I think it comes out to like $20 or something like that. So if you just want something really silly to do with your friends, I would recommend doing it that way. And there's not very many people in, yeah. I think it all depends on like who you go with and stuff like that. Because if you go with people that are just like not feeling it, it's like, but if you go with people that are having a good time with it, it's fine. Like you all just like accept the ridiculousness of the situation and just kind of go with it.
Right.
So anyway, here's some more ridiculous news for you guys. Men in Black is officially coming back to the big screen. Sony has officially greenlit a spinoff for the popular action extraterrestrial series, but don't expect to see Will Smith back on the big screen in his black suit. As part of the new spinoff, they're actually basically going to take the world that Men in Black has created, so like this secret operative apart from the government agency that tries to, I was going to say protect the world from devastation, but that's the Team Rocket. I tried to make a joke and I mixed up my pop culture references. Anyway, so the Men in Black universe is still going to exist, but you're going to be following a new set of heroes as part of this upcoming spinoff. And allegedly, it's actually going to take the fight to protect planet Earth to the global scale. So it's not necessarily just going to be something that's based in New York or America like the sequels have done. It's going to be kind of finding these new Men in Black traipsing all over the world. So if you're interested in that, it's actually set to hit theaters in 2019. So Sony Pictures is very serious about bringing this back. I remember watching the first Men in Black in theaters. It was like a big to-do. It was like
I love Men in Black.
It's really fun, but I've never seen the sequels. I've only seen the first one.
I don't know if I ever have seen the sequels either, actually, but I love the first one. I rewatched it recently. I don't remember why. I
think it holds up?
It does hold up. It really does hold up. And it was very surprising. But the jokes may be a little bit less, but just in terms of, the quality of it, the surprises in it, the weird, like, alien creatures, it's all super fun. And you can super tell that it was done in the same area, like, age bracket as Space Jam.
Oh, that's so awesome. That excites me. Because it's like, there are some movies from my childhood like that and The Mask that I feel like go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But I'm always so scared to watch them because, like, I know that they're super kitschy, but I thought that they were really cool at the time.
I really enjoyed. It's hard though, because when you go back, I feel like the most successful movies, like something like Men in Black, has been done again, you know? Yeah. And so when you go back, you're like, oh, that's a little bit cliche. But then you just have to remind yourself that it's not, because Men in Black did it first. Yeah. A lot of this stuff.
Do you know what's really fun Men in Black fact? Will Smith was not meant to star in it originally. Do you know who they wanted to star in Men in Black?
No, who?
David Schwimmer.
What?
Yeah, just imagine David Schwimmer.
No.
Yes, as Jay.
Oh, no.
You couldn't.
No.
So think the casting agents. I love David Schwimmer,
but no.
That changed their minds. Or maybe it was Schwimmer's schedule. It was like a scheduling conflict. But either way, we almost had Schwimmer. That but was, we got that was Will Smith.
A stroke of luck there.
Yeah.
It would not have been the iconic classic that it is now without Will Smith.
I can't imagine anybody but Will Smith saying, like, NYPD means something else.
Well, maybe they rewrote the part a little bit. You have to imagine. You have to hope.
So there's your fun Men in Black fact for the day.
That is a fun fact. Wow. I feel very... I'm, like, shook right now. I don't know how to go on. Well, I guess, you know, Galaxy Defenders might need to defend the world from the Avatar sequels that never end. I don't know. because the what's their faces are Niaris. I don't remember. It's been like 10 years, guys. Anyway, the Avatar sequels are barreling along. They finally entered production a couple of weeks ago with the first one. I believe it is scheduled for 2019, 2020, something like that. They're going to run through 2025 anyway, so we're going to be here talking about Avatar, whether we like it or not, for a while. But there might actually be a reason to talk about Avatar now, because they are bringing in everyone's favorite holiday star, Kate Winslet. She's joining the cast. She's joining Sigourney Weaver, as well as, Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, and Cliff Curtis is joining the movies as well. We don't yet know what role she will be, but what is sort of fun about this story, aside from just the fact that we like Kate Winslet, is that she is sort of re-teaming with James Cameron for this, because, of course, the two of them were together on Titanic in 1997. And this movie, by the way, it comes out in 2020, with the third, fourth, and fifth following in 2021, 2024, and 2025, if the world is still here at that time. So, I mean, it's so funny with the Avatar sequels, because James Cameron is obviously filming all four sequels back to back, and you know, they're kind of expecting that they will be successful, because the first one, which came out in 2009, was incredibly successful. And whatever you might say about the story, you know, it did such huge work in terms of visual effects and 3D technology. It really changed the industry in that way. So just visually, these movies have been in the works for so long, and we have to expect that they're going to be extraordinary, at least the way they look. But, you know, the story is still kind of a little bit iffy whether we really can be expected to care about the saga of the Na'vi for another four movies. So how do you feel about this? How do you feel about Avatar and Kate Winslet? Is Kate Winslet the, you know, the hidden ingredient that's going to make us all care about this?
Maybe. I mean, like, it's hard not to love Kate Winslet because she's so passionate about everything she does. And, like, she's so genuinely passionate about the things that she chooses to work on. So I'm going to say yes, but also confession, I actually didn't really like Avatar the first time it came out. Like, I felt like it was, like, so-so. And I think it was because when I went to see it, I went with my friends that were going to see it again. And they had, everybody had been hyping it up at that point that I was sitting there and I was like, oh, I guess this is fine, but, like, it doesn't make me feel, like, I feel like I should feel more. But as a cinematic work that was leaps and bounds technologically ahead of everything else that was out at that time, I do respect it for that. I just don't know about the story.
Exactly. I feel like I'm the same way. And, like, not only was it obviously a Pocahontas ripoff, like, has been heavily discussed on the internet, but also just, you know, the story wasn't very original. It wasn't very engaging. I'm totally not here for Sam Worthington's character that turned out to be a twin, spoiler alert. Like, I found that so boring. The Na'vi, I guess they're kind of fun, but like, I don't know. I'm not really here for it. But I will say it's one of the only, and again, speaking of the visuals, it's one of the only movies that I actually felt like the 3D, not only was the movie actually better in 3D, I felt the same way about Jungle Book, but it actually added something to the story that wasn't there. Usually I find 3D annoying and distracting, but for Avatar and for Jungle Book are probably the only two movies that I felt like the 3D made it better and that made me feel like I was experiencing the movie in a different way. Funnily enough, I think that the Men in Black sequel, the third or fourth one, came out around the same time. That had awful 3D. So, point of comparison, I guess. If they add Will Smith to this movie, do you think that's going to solve it?
Will Smith is going to take down the threat to is it Pangea?
Men in Black versus the Na'vi. There you go.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's the fifth movie. Then Dumbledore and What's-His-Face have a battle.
Oh my God. I totally agree with you though. Like, and I think that that's why I was so conflicted. I've only ever seen Avatar once. Maybe it's time to rewatch it just to kind of, you know, see if some of my bitterness has subsided. But I have never felt more conflicted in a theater before ever, because it was visually beautiful.
Yeah.
But also, like, I was really not feeling the story.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. So I guess, like, to that regard, you know, James Cameron is kind of, like, partially on our shit list right now because of some of the things that he said about other franchises. But I will say that, like, the fact that he's taken this long to wait for, like, technology to catch up with the vision that he's had, like, is it, like, has it been too long? Like, do audiences still care? Debatable. But I do have faith that he'll do something really cool. You know, like, visually, I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't know about the story. Okay, let's see. What else do we have here? Well, moving on to some TV news. The Good Doctor, which is ABC's new medical drama, has officially been picked up for a full season at ABC. Now, this is where I'm a little bit out of touch, you guys, because I thought I was the only person that had tuned into the show, but I guess not. It's actually doing really well. It stars Freddie Highmore and Antonia Thomas, who many of us will know from Misfits, and also Richard Schiff. And if you've been enjoying the show as well, I feel like we had a few people write in saying that they really liked the pilot. And it's good news because we're going to get more episodes. The series was actually an early hit for the network and garnered 11.2 million views, which I guess is not surprising because Americans really, really like their medical dramas. And it's a lot easier to jump into something that's new, like The Good Doctor, versus trying to jump into something like Grey's Anatomy, which has been going on for like 13 seasons. So yeah, some good news if you're a fan of The Good Doctor, and I'm still watching, so I'm still intrigued. I'll keep you guys updated on how I feel about the season as the show progresses.
Yeah, I still haven't watched it, so I don't know anything, but the thing that I take away from this news is that shows that have the word good in the title, they trick people to think that the show is good. They do well.
That's really funny. The longest
Doctor,
time,
The Good Wife, The Good Place, I'm sure there's more.
for like a good 2 weeks because I do that. I have a really bad habit of skimming on Twitter. Like I only stop when, you know, it's somebody that I follow religiously has tweeted something. I kind of just like look at the icons and then kind of like glance at the headlines. It's really bad. I thought that Freddie Highmore was joining The Good Place and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Cause I saw The Good and I didn't see Doctor. I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. You know, Freddie Highmore on The Good Place. Okay. And like, he's dressed as a doctor. A doctor must come into season two somehow and like shake things up. Okay. Not out of the ordinary. And then I realized that it was an entirely different show. I was very embarrassed when I discovered this.
Yeah. Well, luckily for us, good isn't the only buzzword that gets shows renewed because Freeform has officially renewed The Bold Type, everyone's new favorite show, for not one, but two seasons. A total of 20 episodes are coming our way over the following few years. Now, The Bold Type, we've obviously talked about it on Hype before. It was kind of, as Pam writes in this very brilliant news article on Hypeable, it was pretty much the runaway hit of the summer and kind of captured everyone's attention. It was exactly the kind of female-led, empowering, positive, life-affirming show that we all needed at this time for various reasons, and it makes everyone really happy. And so everyone is obviously really, really happy that it's getting another two seasons, which is kind of awesome to know that we can expect it back for a substantial period of time. Now, obviously, there is a little bit of a twist because no news comes without a caveat in this climate of the world. The twist is that they are going to be helmed by a new showrunner because Sarah Watson, who originally developed the show for NBC, has parted ways with Freeform, citing creative differences. The show will instead be led by Sweet Vicious alum Amanda Lasher. So that's actually also good news because Sweet Vicious was another very important and loved show that unfortunately did not get renewed over on MTV. So seeing Amanda Lasher move on to The Bold Type should be a little bit of a patch on the wound. Lasher has also worked on everyone's favorite show, Riverdale, as well as Togetherness, Gossip Girl, and Lipstick Jungle. So a lot of female-led shows in her tool belt there. So how are you feeling about this, Pam? I'm guessing that you're excited.
Yeah, I've never seen Sweet Vicious, but I know it's very beloved for the barriers that it shattered. I know it's a show that was gone too soon. So I think that it's a good fit. It's great that they've pulled in a new showrunner that understands the importance of tackling important issues head on and doesn't shy away from those things. I think that that's something that The Bold Type needs to keep doing, but in a fresh way. But it is kind of unfortunate that, again, it's like this, it's like a divorce, right? Irreconcilable differences.
Yeah.
That the original showrunner won't be back. I read a really interesting article with her in, I think it was Variety, right around the season finale, where she said that she obviously had some plans for where she'd like to see the series go. And one of the things that she really wanted to tackle was learning more about Jacqueline, which is everybody's favorite character. So I really hope that we still get that. And yeah, I hope that the tone, and I don't care if the tone of the show like grows with a new showrunner, but I hope it doesn't feel out of place, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I agree. I feel totally the same way. And it's hard because neither of us have watched Sweet Vicious. And we really should. Like, everyone's telling us to do it. And even though it's been canceled, I do want to watch it. But I think that we have on the show brought up some issues that we had with season one. Specifically that it was like, and you can go back and listen to that if you want to. But I think the sum of what we said was that the removal of direct conflict between the three lead characters kind of left a weird void where everything just kind of went really well and really easily for these girls, which was nice, but also kind of shows, you know, story thrives. Like, a story is conflict, you know, a story is not just she did her job well, and she got a promotion, and she got a boyfriend, and all was well. You know, like, that's not what a story is. So I think that what we were hoping for, if the show was renewed, was that they would find a way to give these main characters some good, organic challenges that we could then see them overcome, not like just because the world hands them all of the solutions to their problems, but because they actually have to find ways to overcome them, without that meaning that they kind of patch, you know, conflict on by making them jealous of each other or making them fight or all of those cliche issues that are always present. Like it feels like they should be able to tell the kind of story with these three women that you would expect from a show like this that starred three young men who were starting their careers. So I am hopeful that Amanda Lasher will be able to bring the show in that direction, because I think that her portfolio of shows, most obviously Sweet Vicious, kind of proves that there is some ballast there or of more serious drama that still manages to be empowering and female-centric. And obviously the worry that I would have, which is not specific to her, but just in general for the show moving forward, is obviously that it begins to fall into the sort of cliches of the genre, and that the drama becomes too, like, either preachy or too scandalous, you know, those are always the pitfalls. But I feel like it's too early to be worried about that. I am very, very, very happy that it's been renewed, and I'm just overall super excited to see what happens with these three girls. It felt like season one was only the beginning, and it's such a good show to have on TV, and it's such a good, it could be a really good vehicle for telling stories with women that don't usually get told on TV.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that it's so funny, because you wouldn't think that it would be that hard to talk about a lot of these things without sounding preachy, but you see it all the time. Like, mm-hmm. I love Riverdale, and I loved the slut shaming episode, because that's mm-hmm. something you don't usually see on
that. I did not like that episode.
Yeah, but I liked it until it got kind of weird towards the end. But I do feel like that's a really good example of something that was being preachy towards the audience, and it wasn't just like, this is what it is, you know? Mm-hmm. In contrast, the Bold Type handles like basically slut shaming almost with Kat. Right. And it's completely different. Like, you see all different sides. Like, it's,
yeah,
they're both showing that it's wrong, but they're doing it in different ways.
Right. I agree.
Well, speaking of Riverdale, here's some exciting news for those of you that are really interested in the Sabrina the Teenage Witch spinoff that's coming to the CW very, very soon. Robert Aguirre Sacasa, I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's the showrunner of Riverdale. He's also working on the pilot episode for the CW's The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. This is not your mother's Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Let's just put it out that way. We kind of learned a little bit about this show that has been had been greenlit earlier this summer, a few weeks ago, and we learned that there's like a lot of darkness that's going to surround this new iteration of Sabrina. And if you're curious as to how creepy the show is going to get, you're in luck, because Roberto took to Twitter earlier this week to share the first page of the pilot that he's been working on. And it's a little mm-hmm. bit grainy, but if you zoom in, you can kind of, you get a feel for like where the show is going to springboard off from. So the first scene that we get is Sabrina and her boyfriend Harvey taking a midnight walk in the Greendale woods, and Harvey's really creeped out, and Sabrina is like very much one with the woods, and she, you know, kind of says like, oh, as long as you stay close, like nothing's gonna happen, because like I'm here, like I'm going to protect, it'll be fine. And it turns out that she's brought Harvey here not to sacrifice him, so don't worry, but to just kind of like teach him a little bit more about who she is, like who she really is. And she explains that she was born in the woods and she's about to be reborn, and that's why she can't go to the big high school party. So everything kind of goes from there, and it'll be interesting to see kind of where they take this story, because in the original Sabrina, I think if I remember correctly, the rules of the universe were that she like couldn't let people know her secret. I don't know. Did you watch Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Yeah. And I only remember the talking cat.
Yeah. Well, she definitely couldn't tell, like, you know, her friends couldn't know. I'm pretty sure, although I'm sure some of them found out. So it's kind of interesting that she's kind of just letting Harvey into this big thing that is, I'm assuming, supposed to be a secret, but maybe not. So definitely nice creepy vibes here for October, which is pretty fitting. And it should give you a nice little insight as to what you can expect when the show premieres on the CW.
Yeah, I'm fully expecting a Buffy the Vampire Slayer with magic instead of vampire slayers. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. I mean, it sounds like, just looking at the pages in this, I'm like, it's Buffy. And that just might just be my goggles.
What isn't Buffy?
What isn't everything is Buffy? Yeah, if it's not Buffy, it's Merlin. So yeah,
that's true. Everything is Buffy. Everything is Merlin. This is accurate. Yeah.
Which is funny because, you know, magic,
yeah, but I know, and I'm kind of like, it's so weird to say this, but I'm like a little bit okay with that because it's like, oh, look at the lasting impression those things have had on pop culture. Just give credit where credit's due, and, you know, that's fine. All right, last news story for the day is a little bit of music news for you guys. Lorde released her second studio album, Melodrama, earlier this summer, but it looks like she's not done releasing new music just yet. She also took to Twitter just last week and teased a very short clip of what seems to be a new song. It's definitely a track that we haven't heard before, although it does sound like it might be a demo. It's got like this really melodic, slow piano going, like coursing through the back end of the audio. And then she sings over that, "I just want your love. I just want your heart. Heartbreaking love. I just want your love. Give me what I want." So very forlorn. And everybody's kind of just wondering why she's chosen to share this now. A lot of fans are speculating that perhaps we're going to be seeing a Melodrama Deluxe edition come out, because it does kind of seem to be in line with some of the slower tracks that are featured on Melodrama. So it makes sense that maybe she's gearing up to release like a B-side, kind of like Carly Rae Jepsen did with Emotion, or even just like a deluxe version with some songs that didn't make the cut the first time around. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. Yeah, it sounds really cool. She's doing great right now. She's like on her A game for sure.
Awesome. All right, so we're going to move into TV show of the week now. And I'm going to kick us off by talking about a little show called Will and Grace, which came back last week, and it's airing its second episode tonight. So by the power invested in us by NBC Screener Portal, I have already seen it. So, you know, it's so nice to have these screeners at the moment, just like a little inside baseball, because we can be a little bit more current with this podcast than we otherwise would be able to do. So I'm really happy about that. And I'm really glad that actually I got to see episode 2 of this revival before I talked about it, because I think that, as other people have sort of commented as well, the first one of... I should probably explain a little bit first. So for those of you who might not know, Will and Grace, which was obviously this hugely powerful, important sitcom about two gay men and two straight women in the 90s, that really did a lot to increase awareness and just acceptance of LGBT people in the U.S., has come back for a revival. Like, a lot of shows are being revived at the moment, and so it premiered last week and is going to continue on NBC. So as I was saying before, I'm really glad that I got to see the two episodes, because the first one was kind of a little bit of a reintroduction. They kind of tried to return with a splash and following on with the reunion episode that they did last year. And as part of the election campaign, they were very politically focused, and it actually featured all four of the main characters, Will and Grace and Jack and Karen, heading to Washington and having a pillow fight in the Oval Office and all kinds of wacky stuff. And the second episode brought us a little bit more into the groove of what the show is going to be from here on out. You know, it featured Will and Jack having a very sweet story together, and Grace and Karen having a nice little story. And it was very sort of focused on the genuine like love and affection that exists between these four people. So that was very, very nice to get. My initial impression of this is I was always a big Will and Grace fan. I wasn't like a huge Will and Grace fan, but I really did enjoy it. I was very uncertain about this revival just because I'm skeptical of revivals in general, and I feel like a lot of the time they don't work out well. But I'm very impressed overall with this Will and Grace return. I feel like the actors all do a really good job of recapturing their characters without it feeling like they are doing caricatures of their old selves. Obviously, Karen and Jack were always a little bit more caricatured to begin with, but they refine that really well, and they don't overdo it and they don't underplay it. And I find that especially Deborah Messing, who plays Grace, is really just falling back into her role that she played like 10 years ago, and she's doing it so perfectly. And I also think that they do a good job of updating the stories to fit, you know. Just the second episode was a lot about how Will and Jack have aged now, and they're in a different age bracket to what they were when we left them, and how they're kind of dealing with that. And they have sort of a very, very sweet way of dealing with that that was just very heartwarming. I'm also glad I watched two episodes, because the first one, I thought after 5 minutes that I had to turn it off because of the laugh track. It was completely insufferable for me. I don't watch a lot of comedy, and I certainly do not watch a lot of sitcoms anymore. I used to watch a lot of Friends when I was younger and How I Met Your Mother, but I kind of stopped for a couple of years, and now the laugh track is so incredibly grating, and I cannot stand it. And I can't stand the pauses that the actors make after they make a joke, and especially because the jokes are not that funny, and it's like, oh, I can't take it. But in the second episode, I kind of began to get used to it, so I think that I'm gonna keep watching. Like, I think I'm gonna be okay. But that almost broke me, because I'm too old for laugh tracks. It went straight into my migraine, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. And in terms of just the comedy, because the stories were really moving and really sweet, I didn't necessarily find it very funny. And this is a thing with me and sitcoms, and I've talked about this on Hype before, and I know Merrima got really like annoyed with me when I was talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine and how it didn't make me laugh. But truthfully, comedy rarely makes me laugh. I don't watch it to laugh, because I only laugh when something is surprising, and sitcoms are built on cliches and meeting your expectations. And so you usually know when a joke is coming, because it's like punch, punch, joke. I don't care. I can enjoy it anyway. But the second episode actually elicited two laughs from me, which I take as a good sign. One was a visual gag with Jack entering a club, and it was just so funny. And I just laughed. And the second one, and I'm gonna actually quote this now, because I'm expecting that everyone who wants to see it has already seen it, because it kind of takes an interesting turn. Will goes on a date with a younger guy, and he's just so happy, and it basically turns into this interesting thing where he's trying to say, you know, don't forget about past struggles. You know, just because you have it easy now doesn't mean that you should ignore the LGBT people having suffered for your rights in the past. And kind of like glazing over the fact that this ignores that LGBT people still go through a lot of struggles. Clearly this one particular guy did not. And the guy, he's like, rolls his eyes, and he goes, yeah, Will, I know all about Stonehenge. And that just made me laugh, because it's not called Stonehenge. And like, I don't know, that was a joke I was not expecting. So yeah, anyway, the end of my rant here is to say that I'm actually really happy that Will and Grace is back. And I think it has the potential to do something that it wasn't able to do in the 1990s. And obviously, it's going to be interesting to see if it actually manages to go with the time and join the conversation as it is in 2017. But just for recapturing the magic of the original, I think it absolutely did that.
That makes me really happy. I haven't had time to watch it yet. I don't think it's on Hulu. I don't know. I was looking for it on Hulu the other day, and I couldn't find it. But maybe I just didn't like look hard enough, or maybe I just thought they only had the old episodes.
Yeah, well, the screeners are on there, so you can go watch them.
Okay, cool. I'm going to have to do that. Well, that leads in very well to something I watched also through screeners. So thank you, CW, for blessing us as well. So the CW has not one, but three episodes of Riverdale season two up right now, you guys. So I lived my best life last night with popcorn and Riverdale. Oh my gosh. I always feel weird talking about episodes that haven't aired yet, but Riverdale's coming back this coming week. It's definitely a lot darker. There are a lot of really interesting elements that they've been bringing into all of the characters. Archie specifically has finally started to intrigue me.
Oh my God.
I know.
I didn't know that was possible.
I know.
Does he break his guitar?
Let's just say he sets his guitar aside for something else. I know.
Okay.
It's really interesting.
Does he pick up a mandolin?
Oh my God, no.
A trumpet?
No.
They're also doing a political episode, but instead of a trump, it's a trumpet.
You know what? Honestly, like it's not political, but it's a little bit harder than what he's been dealing with in the past. But honestly, like, given the way they left things off in the first season, like that first season finale, there's no way Archie could have come back from that and been his like normal self-centered self. Like, they really kind of threw him for a loop, and he's kind of dealing with the aftermaths of all of that. There's a new threat that's come to Riverdale, and everybody's kind of really high-strung about it. Cheryl also is very intriguing right now. Jughead has started going to, God, I can't remember the name of the other high school, but it's the one that's across the tracks. So he's at the rundown, like, he's not at Riverdale High, he's at, I can't remember. Anyway, basically he's going to school with the Southside Serpents. So you're kind of getting this, and this is not a spoiler because it's in the trailers. It's been in all like the news articles surrounding season two. I think he's going to really be grappling with these two identities, which is basically the identity that he's created for himself, having lived in Riverdale his whole life, and the identity that's being thrust upon him because he is a descendant of a very powerful Southside Serpent. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go from here. First three episodes are really, really great. They're not holding back. And I'm just really excited for the episodes to start airing because I really want to talk about Riverdale with somebody and nobody has seen them.
It's not even me.
sitting here trying not to spoil people when you've seen like all of this content is very, very hard. But yeah, I think that everybody that's following the show that's enjoying it is definitely going to enjoy what they've got in store so far for season two.
Cool. Which was your favorite of the three?
The last one, the third episode.
The last one?
Yeah. Okay. Also, like, we knew this too. Hiram Lodge is in Riverdale now officially. So I think that his and Hermione's relationship is very, very interesting as well. And the way Veronica deals with that. So there's a lot of different, like, dynamics going on. It's not just, like, kids and kids and adults. It's, like, a lot of it is, like, they're crossing, and yeah, it's very intriguing so far.
Cool.
Yeah.
What was the other show you had?
I wanted to talk a little bit about Netflix's American Vandal. It's actually it's a satire comedy that kind of pokes fun at all of those murder mystery type series that have been all the rage for the past few years. It's kind of done in the style of Serial, but it takes place in a high school. And so the people that are investigating this thing that happened in the high school is like the AV club at the high school. It's like these two really nerdy kids. They're trying to get to the bottom of why this one kid is getting expelled. He's like kind of like the class clown prankster. And he's under trial because everybody thinks that he's spray painted a bunch of penises on the cars of teachers. So it's like it's meant to be like it's not serious. It's definitely, like, it takes a serious tone, but it is, like, a comedy because it's kind of, like, ridiculous. So they do everything from, like, create the timelines and try and figure out if you had enough time to get here or there. So if you're a fan of, like, Serial or Making a Murder or things like that, and you want something that's along the same lanes but definitely not to be taken as seriously as any of those, highly recommend American Vandal on Netflix. I don't think it's going to be for everybody, but I have been enjoying that.
Okay, awesome. We're going to move on to listener feedback now. We have a bunch of comments from you guys. And first of all, I want to give a very special thank you to Meg and Laura, who both were so kind to contact me and, you know, settle my unfinished business by telling me that the word that I couldn't remember last week was justified. Justified margins is what I meant when I was talking about Twitter for like 20 minutes. I even cut some of that in the editing because I was like, man, I'm going on for so long about this word I can't remember. It was justified margins, and it frustrated me because I used to talk about it all the time in relation to like uni essays and stuff. But oh my gosh, you know, like when a word just escapes you. And I have to remember all these words all the time that I, you know, I don't use in my daily life. So it's like, have to pull them all out of my brain. Sometimes one gets stuck. Justified. I feel justified right now, and I hope that everyone does as well, because whew, that mystery solved. Next week on Hive. Oh my gosh. And we have some other tweets as well. Another thank you goes to Emilia and Laura for the International Podcast Day shout out. Thank you guys so much for those. Do you want to get this first one from Yuki?
Sure. Yuki says, I don't know why I didn't do this before, catching up on Hive while waiting for babysitting parents to come home. Duh. That's cute. Thanks, Yuki.
That is smart.
You're the best.
Yeah.
In more ways than one.
Just make sure you have one ear thing plugged in and the other one out so you can hear the children if you need to. Oh my gosh. And Laura says, well, it is Comic-Con weekend in NYC and I have so many old episodes to listen to as I wait for books and panels. Thanks, ladies. If I spy any amazing books, I will report back. Please do and have a wonderful time. Laura, I believe, is going to be meeting Tamora Pierce.
Oh my gosh, how cool.
Yeah, so you must report back from that.
Yes. Because
that's going to be amazing.
I went to meet Tamora Pierce when I was in high school, and I don't think I realized like how much it was going to affect me. But it did because, you know, she writes like, you don't realize it when you're that young. I must have been like 14 years old. So like maybe not high school, maybe it was like middle school. But she just like writes all these really strong female characters, and she creates these really rich worlds, and a lot of times you don't realize like how big of a deal that is because there's not a lot of it out there, or there wasn't a lot of it out there up until like very recently. You know, I think we're kind of in the renaissance of strong willed females, and it's really great, but it hasn't always been that way. And she's amazing, and she was like super sassy and super smart. And I remember that she wrote Girl Power in my copy of Trickster's awesome. Choice, and I was really excited about that because she's the best.
That's anyway.
This next tweet comes from Anjali. Is that how you pronounce it? This is for you, Selena. She says, you accidentally calling Tahani Tahini on Hype made me giggle. That's so funny. I think I missed that when you did it. Made me giggle for like 5 minutes. Picturing her reaction is too funny. She's the best character. I love Tahani.
I love her too. And I corrected myself on the episode.
That's probably why I didn't catch it.
Right. But I left it in because, you know, I could have taken it out. But I thought it was funny because like literally in one of her flashback episodes, I think it was her parents spelled it Tahini in her will. And I was like, oh, poor girl. It's happening again. Oh my gosh. She is also, I didn't talk about The Good Place this episode, but the fourth episode is airing tonight when we're recording on a Thursday. And it is so good. And it gave me so many theories that I'm sharing on Hypeable in an article that you guys should all go check out, because my mind is just spinning with all of these theories that usually I only have for dramas. So it's a good time. Meg Roy says in all caps, yes, please do a fanfic podcast. That would be so amazing. We agree. We would love to do a fanfic podcast special. We have to prepare for it a little bit because I mean, I have to like pull out my old archives of like,
gotta sign into that fanfiction.net account.
Yes,
see what dust I, off the what I flagged.
But amazing. Yeah, we definitely want to do that.
Mm-hmm. But like, not just Meg, but like, if you guys are interested in something like that, write in and let us know what kind of things you'd like to hear us talk about. Like, not just like fic recs and things like that, but I feel like it seems like a very narrowed subject, but I think that there's so many ways that we could take it that it would be really helpful for us to hear from you guys about what you'd like to hear us discuss in terms of fan fiction. So let us know.
Yes.
Rachel says, what did you think of Fuller House season 3? I have one more episode to watch. I was really looking forward to season 3, but I liked 1 and 2 more. Rachel, thank you so much for tweeting about this because I completely forgot that I watched this too.
It was that good, huh?
I also feel a little disenchanted. And I love Fuller House, but I do think, I agree with you, that season 3 kind of fell a little flat. I felt like it was a little all over the place. I'm a little bit over the She-Wolf storyline. Like, I think it was really funny the first time, but I'm done with it now. But I think that the last episode was like, it's a huge cliffhanger, and I'll be curious to see where they take things. But like you, I was a little bit unenthused by the third season.
Oh, sad. Do you want to get our email as well?
Yes. Let me just take a sip of coffee first. So okay. You have water. I have caffeine.
It's not that long. You're not going to fall asleep halfway through. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Laura H. says, hey, ladies. I, too, am intrigued by what The Good Place is doing with season 2. I like the show, but I was pretty turned off by the season 1 finale. It seems like a really cheap plot device, and I couldn't see how resetting everything would make for a sustainable narrative moving forward. That said, the pacing of season 2's first few episodes actually seems to be working. I loved the supercut of Eleanor figuring out they were in the bad place over and over again. I was afraid of season 2's arc would be one long will they figure it out slog, but that montage was hilarious. This show might have some life left in it after all. So do you agree with this? How are you feeling?
I agree 1,000%. I had the exact same thought in the season 1 finale. I thought it was I felt like it was a cheap twist that kind of meant that everything I'd been watching up until that point was kind of meaningless. And I too was like super worried, and I continued to be worried for the first couple of episodes of season 2 that the show was just going to be really sort of unsettled and just kind of sketch comedy where it was going to be like SNL, you know, with these players playing new roles every week, and our main characters were just kind of props in their little play. But I will say two things. First of all, I went back and watched season 1 again for the first time, and it was not a plot. Like, it was not a last-minute play. It had been planned from the very beginning. Like, there are clues, really clever clues, from the beginning. And even some stuff that happens in season 2 is really, really carefully threaded in season 1. Like, I think Mike Schur really knows what he's doing. I really feel like this is a show kind of like How I Met Your Mother, but hopefully a little bit better, that is intended to be scrutinized and analyzed and sort of carefully putting the pieces together. And I think that is brilliant. It has kind of made me think of the twist in a whole new light that I didn't before. And then I will also say, like, I don't know if you've watched it yet, Pam, so I won't give anything away, but one of the reasons that the fourth episode of season 3, 2 what year is this, the one that has just aired that you guys have all just watched, that episode sends me reeling with theories because it kind of reveals the end game potentially for the whole show. I don't think so, but that's part of my theory that I'll get back to you guys with next week. But it sets up a purpose for this season that makes it all feel like it matters again. And so I think just how the first couple of episodes revealed that even though there's a lot they don't remember, some things stay the same every time they reset, and some of the experiences they've had in the bad place have imprinted on them and have legitimately changed them in ways that carry on from reset to reset. That means that it's not like pointless. And I think that maybe some of their missing memories are going to be part of the season as well, sort of filling in a few of those gaps. And then with the new sort of plan or end game revealed, I think we can expect that the characters we know are going to remain the characters we know, at least for the time being. And I think that's sort of, because it's nice. I mean, the reboots were funny, but you can't keep that stick up for a very long time. Like, you have to watch the characters progress and grow and change and stuff. And I think we're in for some really good character arcs here. And can we just like squee about Eleanor and Chidi for like just a second? Because, oh my God, I ship it so hard. Okay, that's it. That's all I got. Are you watching it at all? Did it lose you?
No, it didn't lose me. I just haven't had time. Like, mm-hmm. And then I just end up watching other
things.
Too much
Riverdale.
I guess so. I just, you know, I don't even know why.
I guess
why.
I know where your priorities
are. I know.
Lie.
No,
Riverdale
I just,
is like the ultimate bad place. I'm just kidding.
No, but it kind of is. No. I can't even respond to that. Yeah, no, it's just I have a really crazy week coming up this coming week. And so I was like, I need to watch Riverdale because I know that that's going to be a thing that
sure,
I need to talk about.
Yeah.
And then they had three episodes. I was like, how can I resist? I'm just going to watch all three. But the problem is, you guys see, it sounds like a really good idea, but now I have to wait 3 weeks for new Riverdale.
Yeah.
Because I have no self-control.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
That was me with The 100 last year. Like, it was great also because I had to do all those preview posts and stuff.
Yeah.
It was great to have them in advance, but it also meant that you were, like, tripping around just like, I have so much I want to talk about. Just catch up. Come on.
I know. Also, like, I don't think this is a spoiler because it's not a spoiler unless you know the world of Archie comics. But, like, so Riverdale is obviously where Archie and co live. And Greendale is where Sabrina lives. Mm-hmm. And there has been some talk of Greendale in passing on Riverdale. So it I don't know. I'm not saying there's a crossover coming, but I'm just saying that it's very coincidental that they're gearing up to launch Sabrina. And suddenly Greendale is just very, like, you know, casually tossed into the story here, there, and everywhere in the first three episodes.
Yeah.
So.
And the things that people have been saying about, like, Riverdale potentially revealing itself to have, like, zombies and stuff, like, I would 100%
I'm just
that
saying that I would just get back to, let's put a pin in this and I'll come back to it when
okay.
the three episodes
okay,
have aired.
Okay.
But yeah,
okay,
there's
I'm
some
vaguely
stuff.
Intrigued.
There's some stuff that I did not expect to go down. There's some not supernatural stuff, but I don't know. It's not just
Ooh.
Drama anymore, I don't think. We'll see.
Okay. Exciting. Very exciting. Incredibly, I can't believe I would ever use that word about Riverdale, but here we are. So we're at the end of the podcast now. If you would like to send in your feedback on anything we talked about or anything you would like us to talk about in the future, any suggestions you have for us, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on Hypeable, which is hypeable.com, which is also where you find all the news stories that we talked about this week. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. And you can find us on Patreon if you would like to support our show in any, you know, with any amount that you want to or that you feel like you can. Then you can go to patreon.com/hypepodcast and you can check out the kind of stuff that we offer. We have a weekly bonus discussion as well as weekly videos featuring alternatively myself and Pam. And this week's bonus discussion is going to be about Halloween-y movies and TV show episodes that we like to watch this time of year to get us into the Halloween spirit. Now, just the final thing before we wrap up, we haven't done this in a while, but I just wanted to let you all know that if you would like to support the show, but you don't necessarily want to, like, pledge on Patreon, then one very useful thing that you can do, aside from just, you know, spreading the word on social media, is to go into iTunes and give us 5 stars as well as a little review. And that will help us rise up in the podcast rankings. If you have an iPhone and you've seen the podcast app, you know how terrible that is. And I have a theory that Apple might be trying to kill podcasts, but we will not die. Hashtag Riverdale zombies. So, you know, just 5 stars and a little review, and that would mean a lot because it does help spread the word about our show. So thank you so much to everyone who listens. We hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you next week for episode 165. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Goodbye.
Bye.